it's time to take a listen to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you by Placemakers every Saturday morning from 10 till 12. Last Saturday, Jan Scott talked to Charles Graves about the decision to grant the waste management tender for Waiheke to TPI. She talked to Mitch Mahuli from St John's and Russ Thomas from Food Direct. But first up, she talked to veteran broadcaster Ross Goodwin.
It's now my pleasure to introduce Ross Goodwin.
Hello, Jan. How are you?
I'm very well. And how are you, Rossy?
Excellent.
That's good. Now, you've had a bit of a colourful career in broadcasting. You started out in Australia?
Yes. Whereabouts? Brisbane, bit in Sydney, Longreach, Mount Isa, which was severely weird.
Okay, that's why you came to New Zealand and caught up with Hauraki, is it?
Exactly.
Right, right. Now, tell us something about those Hauraki days. You were there right from the start, weren't you?
About 6 months after they started.
Right.
Because I was at the time, two or three of us had been brought over for what was going to be a rival station called Radio International, which turned out to never happen, be a bit of a con. Became Radio I, though, because new people came in, took it over, and on it went from there.
You got involved with Radio I after Hauraki, didn't you? Did you?
No. Only in the early days. My wife worked there.
Aha, right. Yeah. Now, Hauraki, you were out there on the good old ship Tiri, weren't you, out of Great Barrier?
Yes, we weren't really out there, though, because... back then, we used to play things called records, and you put a needle on them, and, of course, the rough seas.
Doesn't quite work with a
needle. Doesn't work with a record and a needle, so it was pre-recorded on land and flown out to Great Barrier and then trucked out.
So how many would have been on the ship at one time? How many of you?
On the actual boat, mainly able seamen, one guy doing all the technical stuff, so you're probably talking about eight guys.
Okay. And you didn't actually get to stay out there on the ship?
Only at the end, and that fateful ending, when we finally got a license, we were all out there, and it was a very big night, but very big seas, as it turned out.
Was that when she went aground?
No, this was when we were awarded a license, and we were going to sail into a big civic reception and the whole bit. We'd been legalised, but unfortunately one of the guys fell overboard and drowned.
Oh dear, yes, I do recall that now. Your office or the studio was in Anzac Ave, wasn't it?
Yes, for all the pirate years, which was great fun. It was handy, the station hotel.
Exactly, right across the road. And I sort of remember the days when Hey Jude and MacArthur Park came out and you played
they
them
were
back to
very
back
handy.
And gave you about a quarter of an hour to zap across the road and have a quick one.
Exactly.
Can't do that anymore.
No. Well, you can because it's all computerized now, so you can do whatever. Right.
Now, you ended up sort of doing station management there, didn't you, Hauraki?
About the third time I went back to Hauraki, I was program director. Maybe twice. Hey, it was a long time ago. If you can remember the 60s to 80s, you weren't there. Yes.
Now, after you left Hauraki, what did you do from there?
A combination of TVNZ, where I was doing TV2, TV1 voice work, and renovating houses.
Right. And then you were in more recently doing sort of consultancy work, is that right?
Yes. Primarily in Australia. Maybe for the last 10, 15 years, I've done a lot of it around the country, and then in Australia for... a group over there in Adelaide and Melbourne. So, but I'm tired of that now.
Right. And what sort of consulting were you doing?
On straight programming.
Okay. So you kept up with the trends and
yes, and Australia is very different radio. It's not like Auckland where there's 100 stations. Over there there's 10 or 12. And so it's like the good old days of war, but it's a very hard battle. Very expensive war to play in Australia. And that everyone's grossly overpaid on air. and they've got to produce results. You know, some salaries, over $500,000 for breakfast announcer. No one would have any idea of that in New Zealand.
Wow. Oh, yes, I might have to set my sights a bit higher.
Yes, indeed.
Yes. You've kept up to the, with the current trends and with all sorts of music. And yeah, I know you've got a reputation in the business of having an excellent ear, of being able to...
Can't sing on key, but I know a hit when I hear it.
Exactly, exactly.
I only missed one in my entire life. Uh-huh. The manager and I used to listen to all the music, and he picked one, Tracy Chapman, that wimpy first thing she did. That was the only one I ever missed, and it was, hey, became a gigantic hit.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Well, was this something that you worked on, or was it just came naturally?
No, picking hits is funny, but after a while, what came in late 79 was research, and you really could see where the punters were. You could see when they would go on a song. Every song took 12 weeks to become a gigantic hit and on what's called the A-list, and never varied. Now it's different. It's such a bloodbath in radio. There's so many of them. It's a different war now. Top 40 would never be a number one station again in Auckland. It's kind of sad, but that's life.
Yeah.
Very expensive radio to do.
Mm. And it makes you wonder how on earth a population the size of Auckland can sustain so many different stations.
Yes, well, you've got a huge baby boomer bubble, which is why ZB and Coast are number one. Mm. They just own that target. And that's why it works.
Mm.
And classic hit, there's a few of them in there. But down the bottom, all particularly the low powers and all of that down the bottom, God knows how they survive.
Don't know
who pays.
Mm.
It's not like community radio here where donations and life come in. But they all get bought in the end by the two big ones.
Yeah, I guess they do. You're listening to Island Life, and we're chatting to Ross Goodwin, who has had an illustrious career in the radio industry, an ex-radio hierarchy good guy, and he's a resident on the island now. Has been for some years, I think, Ross.
Indeed, late 96.
Right.
Got too depressing in the city. The traffic got worse and worse, and we thought, got to come over here.
Yep. The number of stations in Auckland, I guess that a lot of them are targeting a pretty small or selected section of the...
niche marketing
radio.
The problem is it's a bit hard for advertisers. They just go, well, how does it work? So it's a hard business for them all in Auckland now. We need a quick 2 million people in Auckland. Well, the whole country does.
Yes, yeah. The frequencies, you know, we've had a problem here on Waiheke, of course, and we lost the fairly strong frequency we had, and we had to compete out there in the market to buy the frequencies we've got now. And, of course, the old frequency, I think, went for quite a horrendous price.
Yes.
That was just way out of our range. And the two channels we've got here now are still quite weak. I mean, I can't hear it in Rocky Bay. That's a very important audience over there.
Yes indeed. Protest heaven in there.
Yes. So what are you doing with your life now?
As little as possible.
As little as possible.
I occasionally consult people in the city and just live the good life here and look after my wife. She still slaves away. So
that's good. Yeah, she's keeping you in
manage. Take care of her every need.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, that's something we'll just get on to a different tack. You are an excellent cook. How did you get into cooking? Was it sort of back in your flatting days? Or?
Yes, back in flatting. I left home very early to get into radio, so I thought that's what I wanted to do, be a disc jockey. And the moment you start flatting and you live with other guys who live out of a can, you discover, need more food than this. So I started into it way back then when I was 17, 18.
So you did it by trial and error?
Necessity, yes.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Because you really enjoy cooking, don't you?
To a degree, yes. I wouldn't want to make it a life's work. No. Like I wouldn't want to own a restaurant. I'd love to visit them, and often do, but I don't want to do the work.
Right, So have you got any tips for people who are keen to get into the radio scene?
Oh, that's a bit hard now. Very hard to break into Australian radio if you're a Kiwi because of the accent. So that makes it difficult, and you've got to break in here where everything's automated. And what that effectively means is it's downloaded on a computer. Very little of it's live, except for the ZBs of the world. So it makes it very hard. Back then, there were midnight Tadoul announcers. They were actually live and there. Now there's none. There's practically none from about 1 p.m. in the afternoon till 6 a.m. So it makes very hard for young talent to come through. And the pay isn't what it was back in the wild old days of the 80s. So you've just got to hack away if you really want to do it. Go to the training schools, listen to what they've got to say, because that is where they do hire out of the major networks. So best way to go about it. And just keep hassling. If you really want it, you just can never say die.
Right. And, of course, local radio stations like Waiheke Radio are a good training ground.
Yes, they are, but they need that extra training. You need the discipline, shall we call it, of commercial radio. Mm-hmm. There's certain things that are just prerequisites until this new form of rating system in the cities that you've got to do.
Right. So how do they do the charts and things these days? Is that all done through
basically sales, which I imagine are quite low these days, but it does include internet buying as well, which makes it more realistic, and some of radio station airplay, but that's where they're going around and around chasing each other's tail.
Mm. Yeah, that's always been a bit of a grey area, hasn't it? In the old what was it, Victrola or days in the States of yes, bribery and corruption with the free albums and things.
Indeed, they were wonderful days. I don't know if they still happen. Lots of free trips and all that sort of thing to see acts.
Mm. Yeah. Now, speaking of that, did you get any opportunities to see some really amazing acts while you were doing your radio work?
Yes. Well, I saw them all back then because the old days of Western Springs, there was no sound control. It could be as loud as. So the best, obviously, were Led Zeppelin, amongst the worst Credence, because they had a terrible sound system. You pretty much saw them all back then because they were always touring through Western Springs. The one I missed, I was offered a free trip to see Elvis, and I just couldn't go.
And
depressing. You look back at on that now and say, why didn't I? Because
was he still at the height of
his... No, he was fading. He just started in Las Vegas back then. And all going to go, but some drama or other happened at the radio station, and that was that.
Oh, darn.
Darn.
Not meant to be.
No.
But those days at Western Springs, I mean, it was not a terribly good venue, but the ambience there was great. People, I remember seeing Neil Diamond there, for instance, and Elton John.
Yes, and what was the favourite? Fleetwood Mac. It was just that sort of day. It was a perfect day and everyone went. 100,000 people there. Huge.
Well, the first time that Elton John came out here, I was in the record business in those days and we had his the licence for his records. And that was the largest crowd he played to, 35,000 people.
Oh, it was wonderful too, but it had volume. You know, you go and listen to some of these concerts outside. I won't mention one that happened on Waiheke. I mean, I could play louder, or I could play Mysterio louder than they were allowed to play because of a whole bunch of noise control. guys walking around with little meters.
It's a bit sad, isn't it? Particularly when it's not in the wee small hours of the morning. And, it's not.
I mean,
night.
Led Zeppelin wouldn't even come here.
No.
No. Even if they do reform. Yeah. You just can't control those sort of bands to a certain volume.
So is there a band that's around at the moment that you'd really like to see that you haven't yet? Or a soloist? Or?
Funnily enough, it's kind of weird, but I really like the band Live, the one that did Lightning Crashes and that sort of thing. The lead singer's got this out-there voice. I'd like to see him live. One day.
You never know.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you, Ross, for coming in.
No problem.
It's been a pleasure. And we've been talking to Ross Goodwin about his days in the radio. It's my pleasure now to introduce Charles Graves, who's come in to talk to us about all sorts of things that have been happening to our island lately on the political scene. Welcome, Charles.
Thanks, Jen. It's quite interesting actually to be talking on the microphone instead of wiring the microphone.
Yes, you've been heavily involved in the radio station, haven't you?
Yeah, well, yeah, on the nuts and bolts, putting it together, not actually talking on it, so it's actually quite interesting to be using it now.
That's great, yeah, and of course we desperately need people with your talents in the background.
Right. Yeah, well, we do what we can.
Yeah, right. So, this week has been a bit of a political upheaval for Waiheke, hasn't it, with the loss of our waste contract?
Yeah, okay, we've officially lost the contract at this stage, but it's the, you know, we may have lost the battle, but I don't think we've lost the war. Looking at it, you know, from many sides, it seems to be that the process was rigged from day one. When you have a look at the, you know, the tender, original tender, the concept of the waste management on Waiheke was engineered to make it favourable to other parties rather than the incumbent to meet the tender. Then we move through the process. You know, you have a look that... there's my boy in the background, can you hear him? you know, you work through the process of denying public speaking. You've worked through the process of trying to remove as many opposition councillors from the process by engineering conflicts of interest, councillors having to deny, you know, to say basically I can't vote in this, I've got a conflict of interest. You go to the meetings, the councillors didn't want to listen. They basically, you could see the citizens and ratepayers, the blue suiters. Do you notice they wear blue suits? Did you notice that? They wear. Yep. They're all there. You've got like two sides to the council. You've got CNR, the blue suits, the serious, and then you've got the other side, the City Vision, the Labour, and they kind of dress like the rest of us. It's kind of like the us and them, which I found really, really striking. And it was like the them had a closed mind over this right from day one. We were going to get the contract was going to go off island. There was an email in September 2008, where a report was asked to be modified to make it clear because they wanted to engineer a change on Waiheke. So, and it's dangerous. I mean, this is just for me, I see this as just being, you know, part one of the beginning of a long line of destruction of, you know, the things that we value on the island.
Well, it's just one of a number of things that the council has closed its ears on the will of the people over the last few months, really, isn't it?
Well,
it's just
years.
Another thing. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Remember we had the whole car park issue and they wanted to redevelop Maitea, turn into another fabulous, exciting enterprise like Devonport Wharf. And, you know, now they've rekindled that. They want us to park up at the Ofeneke car park and they want to get rid of the lower car parking. You know, and I think that they're going to try and build on the success of this one to railroad that through. And you know, I think that we really have to actually stand up now and be counted. And, you know, I think that there's a number of options open to us and some of them are, you know, normal, legal, and some of them may be a bit more fun.
Okay, so what sort of options are you thinking of?
Well, you know, if somebody comes into your house that you don't like, you kind of chuck them out, don't you? So there is a company coming to the island that we don't like, so we can make life difficult for them through all sorts of means and methods. And I think that, you know, basically the public will show their distaste. I mean, simple things like, you know, not allowing them to buy lunch at the lunch bar. You know, little things that, that affect their life. And I think that, you know, it'll need the people to make a change, but I think that, that the immediate challenge is to actually go through and try and get a Royal Commission on the process, because I think the process has been flawed. They disqualified Cleanstream on the basis of canvassing after the tender closed. Now, the emails that Cleanstream made to the council, as I understand, were basically questioning the Mount Visi and the existence of Mount Visi, the rubbish there that wasn't recyclable, the 40,000 tonnes of contaminated glass. I don't believe it was to do with anything to do with the actual tender. So apart from the fact that, you know, Waiheke doesn't want our recyclables that we wash, we separate and whatnot to go into Mount Visi. We don't believe that that is where they should be going. If that's canvassing, well, I don't think that canvassing for the environment is political canvassing. I would like them to open up their email system to see what communications there had been between Aaron Batniger and the other tenderers. They've interrogated looking for specifically emails from John Stansfield and Cleanstream, but have they opened up the email system and looked for other emails from other tenderers? No, they haven't. It hasn't been a transparent process right along the way, and I think it needs to be.
There is still another possibility of having it overturned, isn't it? And that is to do with the Committee on Governance, it's the Transitional Committee. They can overturn that decision, can't they?
Yes, and that is part of the battle, this particular battle, but I think that the war is that we need to actually knock that CNR Council back a lot of pegs, because, you know, they are going to continue this blue suit block to try and railroad their ideals of what the island is on us. And I look at the island as being a bit like in Lindley Dodd's book, you know, with Schnitzel von Crumb and his new basket. You know, did he like the new basket? No, not a lot. He liked the old tattered, well-worn, smelly one that felt familiar, felt like home. And that's kind of what Waiheke is to us. It is home. We don't like people that aren't from here making changes on our basket. You know, so you wouldn't like your neighbour coming in and changing the decor in your house, would you? Well, unless you wanted to be on changing rooms, but you know, so. But that's what we put up with here on the island. I mean, this is the uniqueness of the island. This is why people visit it and say it's so fantastic, because of what it is, not what the CNR blue suits think it could be. They don't understand. They don't live here. They don't, you know, and that's the big danger.
Do you see the new governance set up, whether the super city set up, offering a new opportunity for Waiheke?
Basically, the way the Royal Commission worded the increased powers of the Community Board gave us greater options, but we don't know whether we're actually going to get that under the super city, you know, and I'm not entirely sure what safeguards there are and beyond the super city being set up for continuing those things. It's a bit like, you know, the telecom free local calls that every pops up every so often. We're going to lose them if we deregulate telecom. So, you know, I think that we need more control by the community board for spending in the community. And if they don't give us that, then, you know, we're in trouble.
And, of course, the submission process is still... is still going for that.
And, of course, there's a meeting tomorrow, isn't there?
There's a meeting tomorrow, yes,
that
indeed.
We must attend, mustn't
we? We all must attend at the Morrow Hall. I think that's at 1:30.
1 o'clock.
I did mention it earlier in the What's On. I'll mention it again before the end of the program.
Well, if it's at 1:30 and you turn up at 1 o'clock, you'll still be there, right?
Absolutely. Yes. You'll be nice and early. Right. So, have you got anything that you would like to wind up with to
I actually would like Waiheke Islanders to actually open their minds and actually have a look at what we're going to lose by losing this tender. We will lose Junk to Funk. Now, how many of you guys have been out to Junk to Funk and really enjoyed it? That was, you know, it's been put on by the Waste Resource Trust, our next door neighbours here, right? We're going to lose the Waste Resource Trust. I mean, you know, that's part of Cleanstream, the part of the whole package. We're going to lose the education, right? We're going to lose the people wandering around and trying to say, hey, listen, you know, recycle, clean up, you know, separate, green waste, compost bins, worm, you know, all the stuff. You've been next door, you know what they do. That's going to go, you know. We're going to lose the caring. We're going to lose the fact that people walk down the beach and they pick up the bottle and they go and put it in the right bin. We're not going to care anymore, are we? You know? And last night I was pretty, I'm pretty wound up about this. I mean, you know. And so I set up a website, and not to discredit the Waiheke TV people, but I had this domain name for a while, so I use it, waihekitv.co.nz. And on I've put a number of clips that talk about recycling on Waiheke, YouTube clips, all in the one place, the recycling on Waiheke and a couple of the meetings, including the Campbell Live video. So if you haven't actually had a look at what's been going on, just log on to waihekitv.co.nz and have a view of those clips. And then in one of them in particular, the April Council meeting, shows, you know, the arrogance of Aaron Batnagar. And I'm going to say it, you know, publicly. He's arrogant. He's railroading us. He has no interest in our community. And, you know, I'm listing him as Waiheke enemy number one at the moment. And, you know, I'm going to go on record saying that. And I just, you know, urge you to go waihekitv.co.nz, go and have a look, watch those videos, and, you know, take a stand, make a stand, ask, go to Nikki Kaye, ask for a Royal Commission, do whatever you think you can. But this, you know, we may have lost a battle, but we haven't lost the war.
Great. Thank you very much, Charles.
Thanks.
I've been talking to Charles Graves about some of the issues that are facing the island at the moment.
You're listening to Island Life, brought to you by Placemakers. Know how, can do.
It's my pleasure to introduce Mitch Mulhooly from the St John Ambulance on the island. Mitch is one of the AMBOs, and she's involved in the midwinter dip, which it will be held down at Little Only Roa on Sunday the 21st. That's a Sunday week, at the beginning to sort of kick off the National St John's Appeal Week. Welcome, Mitch.
Good morning, Jane. Thank you.
Now, tell us something about the St John's Appeal Week and the Big Dip.
Oh, well, the St John Appeal Week runs from the 21st of June through to the 27th of June. It's our annual appeal, and it's a nationwide appeal, which is to raise the awareness of St John and what we do in the community, both locally and nationwide. And so to start that off, here on Waiheke, we are having a midwinter dip.
That sounds great.
And cold.
Refreshing, I think, is the word. Refreshing. So you'll have people down there to give hand out towels and warm blankets and things when people get out of the water, no doubt, and hot drinks.
Yes. Yeah. We're actually going to have a soup station available, which is also a fundraising initiative. And we're going to have a sausage sizzle, because I believe that's a very important thing to have on an event on Waiheke. There's also going to be lots of St. John people around, lots of balloons and lots of giveaways. We've got some great prizes for dress-ups for people who dress up for the dip, a team's prize, individual prize for the kids as well if they dress up, and yeah, we will have blankets and stuff available should anybody need them. Absolutely.
Right. I gather that you had some really good support from local businesses for sponsorship and the like.
We have had fantastic support from the local businesses. Wild on Waiheke has given us a team's prize for 10 people, up to 10 people, for one of their adventures. We've had great support from Te Whau Restaurant, who's given us a $200 voucher, and Video Easy as well, who's given us a gift voucher for the kids. Plus, we've had lots of other bits donated, such as tomato sauce for the sausage sizzle and, you know, things like that, which is wonderful. It's great how the community pulls together for something that's so vital to the local community.
Yes, indeed. And who's doing the sausage thistle for you? Have you got volunteers to do that, or are you looking for somebody to do it?
We actually have. We've roped in Ron Leonard of the fire service. He's going to be our main sausage man.
Perfect. Yeah, he does a good sausage.
I believe so.
Yes, indeed. Now, is there a charge for entering this competition?
No, not a charge at all. What we're asking people to do is actually be sponsored to do it. So, for example, we've got sponsorship forms printed, and what you do is you go to all your friends and all your workmates and anybody else you can get some money out of, and get them to sponsor you to actually do the dip, and then that sponsorship money goes to St John.
It's great. Now, does the money that's raised on the island stay on the island?
It certainly does. That is a main thing. Whatever is raised here on the island will go back into the community. definitely.
That's great. I was involved with St John's a few years back now. I was on the committee there for a while as secretary when they built the new building in Belgium Street. And
Thank you.
we did quite a lot of fundraising back then, always had good public support. But I think, too, there was a bit of a thought that St John's is quite a wealthy organisation and doesn't need as much support as perhaps people think. But that's not the case, is it?
No, not at all. St John is a charitable organisation. We rely on donations by the community and bequests, etc., for our funding. Here on the island, we rely quite heavily on donations. That helps the local service, and what it does is it gives us extra equipment on the ambulances, facilitates training opportunities both for our permanent officers and also for our volunteer officers, and also for our youth brigade as well. We've got a very strong youth brigade, and it helps to be able to, you know, put those kids into uniforms, etc., etc. So we are a charitable organisation. We have a very strong volunteer ethos, and we rely very, very heavily on volunteers to run our service.
Right. I'm glad to hear you've got a strong youth section, because that dwindled there for a wee while, I think, and it was struggling. It was Pat Burgess that plugged away in there to keep that one alive.
Yep. And Pat Stoll is the head of our youth, which is fabulous. She does a wonderful job. I believe we have about 23 youth members now, which is awesome, and we're always looking for more. We're always looking for leaders and stuff as well. What our St John Youth does is basically gives kids from the age of 6 through to 18 years a good opportunity to learn life skills. Life skills such as first aid, health, other skills such as, I think there's a recycling badge that they do, and there's an environmental badge that they do, and all sorts of stuff. And it is really, really important for the kids to have some type of thing that they can look forward to and do, you know, within the community.
And when does the group meet, though?
Every Tuesday. Tuesdays, I think, from 6 till 7 in the evenings, I think, is their time.
Right. And do you have plenty of adult volunteers as well?
We're always on the lookout for more adult volunteers, our volunteers for our ambulance service and also our events, events here on the island, such as, you know, the dirt track and that sort of thing, where an ambulance must be on site in order for them to run the event. So we are always looking for volunteers. We have a very, very good team of volunteers at the moment. They're a fantastic bunch of people whom I adore dearly, and we're always looking to grow that team.
So what sort of training would you need for that?
The basic requirement for becoming a volunteer on the ambulance is a first aid certificate, and St John actually provides all the other training that you need.
Right. Does that entail going up to town, or is it all done on the island?
There is some stuff we are able to do here on the island, but there is some stuff that needs to be done in town, such as driving courses and that sort of thing need to be done in town with a qualified driving instructor. One of the main reasons that we're doing this dip on the 21st of June is that we want to raise money for a mannequin, an advanced life support mannequin. Now, once we have that mannequin, it will be able to facilitate us to be able to run more courses on the island, so volunteers won't have to go into town for all their courses that they need to do. So that's our main focus for the dip.
That's great. Is there a cost? I mean, does it cost the person? They have to pay their own boat fares and expenses to go up to those courses?
No, not at all. It's all covered by St John. Okay. And we have very, very good support from Fullers in that aspect as well, from ferry fares.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
It is.
Excellent. And your local committee is pretty active, isn't it?
Yes, they are, yep, and we're trying to be more active within the community. We're trying to give St John a really good proactive appeal, you know, profile within the local community.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, what has just been happening at the building there? we've had a number of people say, oh, what's happening down there? It looks like they're closing it down or something. But
No, not at all. What has actually happened is that our ambulances now are too big to fit into the doors. So what we've had to do is actually get the door raised and the front part of the station actually raised so that our ambulances will fit in to the station. So it's all finished now, thank goodness.
Yes.
It was a little bit disruptive there for a while, but we're very, very happy that it's done now, and our ambulances are safe and dry.
Excellent. How many staff have you got on the island now?
Now we have three permanent officers. There's myself, I'm the team leader, We also have Billy Dan, who's been working here on a relief capacity for probably about 12 or more years, actually. And we have Ian Fraser as well, who has recently joined us in January here on the island. Ian's actually been a resident of the island for about 10 years, I think, but has just recently come to work here, which is fabulous.
So how long have you been here?
Here on the island permanently, I've been here for nearly 2 years. Before that, I was doing relief duties over here for 3 years previous to that, so almost 5 years in total.
Right. And you were attracted to come over here and stay?
I certainly was.
It must be a bit of a challenge, I would think, the island, you know, from a practical point of view, trying to find houses, and there's an awful lot that don't have letterboxes or numbers, and in the dark and narrow streets and things. That must be a real mission sometimes.
It certainly can be. A lot of houses, unfortunately, don't have driveways. They don't have paved footpaths. So there's a lot of slipping and rocking and rolling and that sort of thing. A lot of people don't have letterboxes with numbers on them, if they have letterboxes at all. So it is quite a challenge. It's a challenge that I actually quite enjoy. It's very, very different to working in town.
Yeah, I imagine it would be. Mm. Although, I guess the sort of situations that you deal with would be similar to the city, would they? Or do we have some peculiarities here?
I think a unique environment has unique situations, but generally speaking, the medical complaints and the majority of the accident complaints are very similar, yes.
Mm, right. That's... we're talking to Mitch Mulhooly from the Order of St John, and they're having a fundraising midwinter dip next Sunday, the 21st, down at Little Oney Roa. What time does that start, Mitch?
The actual dip starts at 10 o'clock, but we're going to be mustering from 9:30 onwards, essentially. We're going to try and create a real fun festival-type atmosphere down there, and so we're encouraging people to come along and be part of the festivities. We're going to have an MC who's going to be giving out spot prizes and that sort of stuff. So it's a really good opportunity to come and support St. John at a local basis, and also to get a sausage and some soup and hopefully go for a swim as well, go for a dip.
Well, I heard one of the guys that was on the breakfast show this morning say that he's going to be part of it. So
fabulous.
If he can do it, everybody can.
Absolutely.
Now, do you have a plan B in case the wind, it's a howling gale into Little O? Would you go over the other side to Blackpool or...?
Our main plan at the moment, that if it's a major sort of wind, then would possibly look at going to Oniroa Beach itself, sort of further up the other end, hopefully out of the wind. We're not too particularly concerned about the rain because we're going to get wet anyway. We are going to have some gazebos and stuff on site so that people can actually stay dry as well. So hopefully, fingers crossed, it's not going to rain, but it is the middle of winter, so who knows?
Yes, that's right. And you can get some gorgeous days, of course, in winter time. So hopefully that will be one of them.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Well, good luck with that. Now, just before you go, have you got a contact phone number if anybody's interested in becoming involved with the youth section or as a volunteer or with St. John's in general?
Absolutely. The best idea is to contact the station direct here. So our phone number at the station is 372-1013. And you can talk to anybody. That's the duty officer on the day, or you can talk to myself. The roster that we work is a three-on, three-off roster. But we have an answering machine as well if anybody would like to leave a message, and I can contact them straight back.
That's great. Thank you, Mitch. And
thank
good
you,
luck
Jane.
With your dip.
Thank you very much.
We've been talking to Mitch Mulhooly from the Order of St. John, and you'll have a lot of fun, I think, if you go down there on Sunday the 21st at Little O for a midwinter dip and to help them start the fundraising for St. John's Appeal Week. It's my pleasure now to introduce Russ and Graham from Food Direct. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello. Waiheke.
Come on. Now, Food Direct, you started up, a month or so ago for online online ordering and delivery,
yep.
Home delivery for food.
Yep. So, we've been launched as Food Direct, just over a month now. And so we started with just, I suppose, that fresh area. So we were bringing over the best quality that we could find directly from the markets in Auckland. And so that's where we've started. But since then, And obviously because the events that have happened, we've gone a bit bigger than that. So we've now got the series organic range on there. We've got local produce on there as well, and we're looking for more local produce. So if there's anyone out there that has some dry goods to start with and then some fresh stuff maybe a bit later on down the line, we can supply that through our website as well.
Right. Okay. Now, so you're only dealing at the moment with fresh produce?
Do you? No, we've got gourmet items on there as well. So there's about 800 plus items on there, from your gourmet, your deli, your milks, your dairy, your cheese, your fresh stuff. But the series organic range has just launched. That's in that dry goods space. And we're hopeful by the end of next week that we'll also have 100% of what you're looking to buy from a supermarket all online through our site as well. So that's quite an exciting development for us, and I suppose the catalyst of that has been, you know, the recent events on the island. But we're aiming to be that one-stop shop for everyone on the island. So pretty much you spend over $75 on our site, free delivery anywhere on the island. So that's Oropu to Oniroa to Onatangi, you know, anywhere we'll be there.
And when do you deliver?
We deliver at the moment Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. And I think our earliest delivery is about 8 o'clock in the morning, and our latest is about 8 o'clock at night. So people jump online, and it'll recognize which zone they're in, and they can choose an hour of when they'd like that delivery. And so they just, you know, select that hour, and then it gets delivered within that hour. But we've currently got a capacity for about 180 orders a week. We're up to about half of that at the moment. If we see that starts to increase because of the diversity of the range that we're bringing on, then we will bring in other days as well. But we're just trying to fill up those 3 days to start with.
That's great. It's also good that you're delivering on a Saturday for those of us who commute. It's brilliant.
Yeah, well, we've certainly had a massive uptake. We've done quite a few little fun campaigns with dropping off free kiwi fruit to the commuters on the ferry. And I think I can't wait to be able to do the little postcards showing someone sitting in their office or in the comfort of their own home ordering their food, you know, with a quote saying, "Do you like my queue?" Yeah, so we've noticed a lot of the commuters are, you know, ordering their shopping while they're in work, and then by the time they get home, we're there with a smile, delivering it and putting it on their bench for them.
Oh, that's brilliant. Now, do you have a depot on the island, or do you bring all the stuff over from town?
No, I think when we were researching which way we were going to go with this system, we were fortunate enough to meet Grant Caran, who launched Food Direct in Auckland, and he studied and spent a lot of time through his master's degree in business in Japan. And as we know, the theory that's come out of there is that just-in-time theory. And so the way we're working this is we noticed that when we were running our little island organics before this, or the markets, was the issue was the wastage when people weren't purchasing what we brought over. So this system means we only bring over what people need. So there's no wastage going on. There's less fuel carrying it, and off we go. So that's really good for us and for our customers as well, because it means we can start to bring down the prices as more people order.
And I guess it means that you don't have to have a huge outlay in a depot or...
Yeah. Well, I suppose what we wanted to make sure that was right. With Island Organics, when we were that, it got too big too quickly, and we needed to go... If we were going to do this, we wanted to do it properly. So we went and found the best, what we believe is the best supplier in New Zealand, and that was Food Direct. So we are Food Direct Waiheke, but... what it meant was we needed to get the branding right, we need to get the systems right, and we need to make sure we deliver what we say we're going to deliver. And so we've got a beautiful new refrigerated truck. You'll see the branding on there, and you know we're running around the island left, right, and center with that. So that was our investment to get the business going. And so, yeah, we're just looking to bring on more lines and bring on more local, you know, items as well. So we're really looking forward to when we are able to deliver the fresh items locally too.
What sort of local items are you looking for?
Well, we currently we've got Island Coffee on board, we've got Providor Foods on board, we've got Waiheke Herb Spread on board, and we'd love to start looking at constant suppliers of that fresh space. So I know John and Margaret down at Waiheke Fresh Produce, they were a great supplier of ours when we do Nine Organics. So that'll be the next phase we're looking at. And then if we can start to put a system and manage it in place, then we can maybe help the people who've got a lemon tree or an apple tree or this and that. So we are looking to go there, but we just need to get our basics right first. Mm-hmm. But if there's anyone else out there that have got local dry goods, you know, in particular, then definitely come and speak to us.
So how would they contact you?
They can call us on 372-2388. or email me, which is russ.thomas@fooddirect.co.nz. But maybe the phone call is the best thing, and we're always floating around and happy to catch up for a coffee anywhere and you know, sit down and see what we can do.
That's great. Now, how do people pay?
All right, at the moment, and again, we're just starting with the basic framework to make sure we can deliver great products and produce to people. So at the moment, to keep things in real time, it's a credit card payment. So you go online, you place your order, you know, you can save it in your favorites, you can chop and change it. And when you go to transact and purchase the order, you actually have to put your credit card number in there. We're using, a BNZ safety secure site to make those payments. You can use the new Visa debit cards that are coming out, and we see that's been quite popular with our customers at the moment as well. But we are looking at, again, because of demand, we're looking at introducing online payments just directly through your account as well. So that option is coming, but initially right now today, if you were to go on, then it would be using your credit card or your Visa debit card.
Are there any credit cards that you don't take?
We take Visa and MasterCard. We don't take Amex at the moment. Yeah.
Okay. And you're really running up and running and really busy at the moment.
Yeah, we're certainly enjoying, you know, the unfortunate events that have happened at the supermarket, because currently right now we don't supply 100% of your shopping needs. So we're actually missing the supermarket being open as well. And I think that's just spurred on for us that we are going to get to that 100% what you need. Let us know as well. You know, jump on the site, send us your comments, and if there's enough demand, we'll put it up there. But we're definitely getting a lot busier. We were already on the upward curve prior to the unfortunate event at the supermarket. But we are involving local communities, local people. We're locally based, and the produce that we're delivering, you can't get at the supermarket anyway, and we're always trying to be price sensitive. So we're just hoping that we're on that upward curve now, and we are looking to supply the whole island. That's where we want to go to, and we'll do whatever it takes to get there and make sure it's fresh and beautiful stuff that we're delivering.
How long has the Food Direct label been going?
Food Direct itself has been going in Auckland since about September last year. And I think Graham and myself had a meeting with Grant and Lara as well, my wife, pretty early on. And so we've got him into action. He wasn't looking to expand as quickly as this, but we've got that going. But again, it's great because he's got that backbone, that back system already in place. So it means it's unlimited, the potential of this business. So that means we can, you know, ensure that everything you order will be in your order, and we can deliver it to the island.
So you've got the franchise for Waiheke, have you?
We've got exclusive rights to Waiheke. And so, you know, you are our customers. We have to work really hard to make sure you're happy, and it's us that will be looking after you. But the beauty is we do have Grant, who's there online as well, making sure that everyone is happy, and we go straight to him if there's anything we need to sort out.
Right. You need to spend at least $75 to get free, or to make it worth your while to deliver.
Mm.
And I guess to make it worthwhile in the first place. For people on their own, no doubt you can get a few friends together and put an order, a joint order in, and have it delivered to one person's house, and then...
Yeah, definitely.
Push it up from there.
Yeah, that's definitely a great idea, but I think the idea of this is convenience in that it's going to be your order. We're going to deliver it to your bench, and if you want to, we can help put it in your fridge as well. But I think what we're doing is just testing it right now, so it may end up that we might reduce that delivery fee, because it's $10 if you don't spend $75 on produce. But I also think with the new offering by the end of next week, with your toilet paper, with everything else coming online, possibly people might get up to that $75 spend anyway. But we're going to look at a little scheme. So it could be, if you're going to be shopping with us each week, then we'll negate that delivery fee if we know, you know, you're going to be a constant customer of ours. So, you know, we're flexible. We live on the island. We're up for discussion. So if anyone wants to come and have a chat with us or ring us and discuss it, then we'll put these things in place if people are going to support us also.
I presume you've got a minimum that you've got to spend.
No, there isn't, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there isn't. But, of course, you know, I suppose we're happy for people to try us initially. But if people are purchasing, I don't know, a mandarin or something like that, then I don't know about that. We might throw it to their house from our house. But, no, you know, we're a business. We're looking to provide people a service. So we hope that people respect us as much as we're going to respect them as well. And we're just trying to get, you know, the volumes up and make sure this is a sustainable, you know, service for the island.
And what is your website address?
It's www.fooddirect.co.nz.
That's nice and easy.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's a nice and easy site to find your way around, is it?
Definitely user-friendly. And look, we've been asking all of our new customers who are, you know, all customers of Iron Organics, how they found it. Comments have gone back to the website. And so far, we've just been overwhelmed with the feedback that's come, whether it's been about the service or the quality of it or using the site. All that we sort of recommend is that if you're, you know, wanting to save time is use the favorite options on the site. So once you've gone in and registered and logged on there, you know, if there's something you while you're browsing, click it into your favorites and shop out of your favorites, because then it stores your favorites there. But you can just go in just like a supermarket, work your way around, have a look what's there. There's loads of specials always available as well, and click it and off you go. Yeah.
Right. That sounds great. And we wish you all the best in your enterprise. It's a great scheme for the island. It's something we really need.
Yeah.
Now, just to recap your contact telephone.
Sure. So it's 372-2388.
And the website is www.fooddirect.co.nz.
That's it.
And that's where you can put your order in and have it delivered with a smiley face.
That's right.
Great. Thank you very much for your time.
No, thank you.
You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you by Placemakers every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, and we replay the interviews on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock, or you can download these interviews from our website, www.waihekiradio.org.nz.